This is the Blaze Radio on demand.
Any home or business can quickly become infested with mold with the introduction of a water source, like a roof or plumbing leak. When your home, your belongings, or your business becomes damaged, it's not just about cleaning up the mess, it's about reclaiming your life, and that's why you need to call the Water and Mold Removal Hotline. A licensed, fully insured, affordable, non-invasive solution to solving any water and mold problems. Our team of trained specialists are available with 24/7 emergency service. We will quickly evaluate your problem and give you a plan that will guarantee results. Water causes damage and mold can spread throughout your property in as little as 48 to 72 hours and can produce allergens and irritants that have the potential to cause serious health hazards. So don't waste time. Give us a call now. For any water or mold problems, call the Water and Mold Removal Hotline.
Call 800-442-7043 today for a free estimate. That's 800-442-7043. 800-442-7043.
Glenn Beck.
The Blaze Radio Network.
I'll introduce you to a new friend of the program. Met yesterday, and I've heard your story before, and I was so excited that you would come in today and talk to it. We spoke yesterday about the Mighty Oaks program, which is, we have got to work together to find a way to save our servicemen, because the rate of suicide is just off the charts. And the government's not doing much about it.
Is it 20, 22 a day?
22
a day. Isn't that the statistic we hear?
That's the statistic right now.
Yeah.
It kind of vary in reports, but that's the kind of industry.
Yeah.
If it was an industry word, is 22 a day.
Man. Probably more than that.
Yes.
But it's really bad. And you were there.
Yes.
And can we start with you being a policeman and the day you shot a man?
Yeah, I had already did 4 years in the Marine Corps, and I shifted from active duty to reserves, and I was going to go back in as an officer. And so my college job was a police officer in New Orleans, and had a wife and kid. And I was only a police officer for a short period of time, and I was involved in a shooting. I was, I'm not sure how far you want me to go into the story.
Domestic abuse.
Yeah, it was a domestic violence call, and I got to the house, and it was a kind of typical scenario where husband and wife are fighting. There was a large crowd of people, about 30 people outside of the house. And we had separated the wife and got her into this crowd. People were holding her back. And the man had barricaded himself into the house with a gun. My partner went to the window of the room that he was in to make sure he didn't shoot out the window. And I stood in the main doorway. And I could see catacorner across the room. He was there was a mirror. And so I could see him barricaded against the wall. And he had he was messing with the chamber of the gun, so I knew he was probably loading it or checking to make sure it was loaded. And so I was yelling at him, not to come out, to put down his gun for us to talk. And he said he was coming out, telling us to leave. And when he came around the corner, he actually had a gun in a very weird way. He didn't have it like this. He had it over his shoulder. And I think he was maybe taunting me or seeing how far he could push it. And I always say, if I was asked that morning what I would have done in that scenario, I would have made a decision. Yeah, I'd clearly shoot the guy. But I'm in this guy's house. His kids are outside. His wife's screaming. Mm. His toys are on the floor for his children and family pictures. I just felt like I could still control the situation. So, I was yelling at him, put down the gun. I'm going to kill you. Like, I wasn't talking to him like a policeman. I'm like, I'm going to kill you. And he's telling me to put down my gun. And I'm a very small guy. He was 6'3", 260 pounds. Mm. But I felt like I could disarm him. So as I walked towards him, I grabbed the barrel of the gun and pushed it away from me, and I kicked him right in the nuts. I thought I could pull the gun out of his hand, and the first time I kicked him, he was just held the gun so tight, and the second time I kicked him, my gun came away, and he grabbed my hand. So we're fighting for two guns now, and I realized that it really had escalated, and I was going to have to kill him or shoot him. So I just broke his grip and came over and I shot, bow. And then I shot five more times. I shot six times. So it was bow, bow, bow. Mm. He had shot, right. I didn't even realize my partner came behind me, but he shot six times as well, right over my shoulder. Mm. And we hit him 11 out of 12 times. And as we hit him, he turned around and he fell on his knees and he looked back at me conversationally and he said, you killed me. And I just tackled him and pulled the gun out from under him and handcuffed him and, his wrist must have been in front of him because all the shots hit center mass, but his wrist was blown out. So I got blood, like I was covered in blood, and so his wife was screaming. And
you were cleared of any wrongdoing in that. Yeah. But you went home that night, and amazing part of the story, and I got to try to condense this as much as I can. But you said your wife said to you, just you told her I killed someone, and you were a wreck.
Yeah.
And she just rolled over in bed and went back to sleep?
Yeah. I mean, at the time, I was just like really angry about that. I mean, my wife is very naive to that kind of world. And so I think that's what equipped her to my 8 deployments to Afghanistan and being a police officer, because she thought that's what policemen did every night. Was went to work and got in gunfights. And she went back to sleep. And I was very angry at her for many years. I felt like I couldn't talk to her about those types of things. And eventually in Afghanistan, I just really didn't talk much about.
You left the police force. You went back. You became special forces.
Yeah.
And one thing that I've heard you say that there's real darkness over there and real bad guys over there. And you felt yourself becoming one of the bad guys.
Yeah. You know, when you go to a place like Afghanistan, you think you go with some kind of patriotic sense of duty. I want to go after 9/11. But then you realize beyond America, what the Afghan people endured from the Taliban people, the things that happened to these children, and start to learn about the culture and what had happened there. I lived in the community, and so it really just grabbed hold of my heart in a bad way, where I just like filled myself with just anger and rage towards these people, and so really kind of you feel like you're going there to fight these evil people, and you kind of become that as well.
You come home. You have all kinds of PTSD.
Yeah.
You don't deal with it. You start to, in a way, protect your family by being a beast and pushing them away. At one point, it's your daughter's birthday.
Yeah. My home became a very, like, unhappy place or unsafe place for my children. I was like time bombed, like angry at the drop of a hat. And one time I came home and from Afghanistan, my daughter was so excited I was going to be there for her birthday. But she's very opinionated. And we had a cake, and the icing was not the icing she wanted. And she said, you know, she voiced that out. And I just got so enraged and would lose control. And I grabbed her cake in front of all of her little friends and threw it against the wall and just destroyed my little girl's birthday. And that behavior was like very common. I knew it was wrong, but I just felt like I had no control over it at that
so
time.
This, I mean, I can imagine, you know, how this dog piles on you, and, you know, men know when everybody does, you know, when you're wrong and out of control, and then it just starts to, I'm a bad person, and you just spiraled out of control. How'd you get out of the nosedive?
Well, it wasn't until, unfortunately for me, rock bottom. I walked out of our marriage. We sold our home. We live in 2 separate apartments, and I became one of those statistics that we talked about, that's 22 a day. I decided I was gonna take my life. And not because I wanted to escape my pain, because I recognized I was the problem. And so I thought my family would be better off. I mean, maybe they'll be sad, but they'll be better off. And I had decided I was gonna take my life. And during this time of contemplating how I was gonna do it, I wanted to make it look like an accident. My wife came to me.
You sat in the closet for every day trying to convince yourself.
For about 2 weeks. About 2 weeks. I heard a statistic that 1 in 3 children from a parent that commits suicide will as well. I didn't know where I heard that from, but I kept thinking of that. My boys, you know, I've wrestled and did martial arts my whole life. My boys really followed me in that. So I knew they looked up to me, and I didn't want to leave that pattern in my family. So I was contemplating how I can make it look like
an accident.
And that's when my wife came to my apartment, and she asked me that question, that reason I'm sitting here in this chair. And she asked me how I could be as successful as an athlete, as a 4th Recon Marine, and seeing the training I've done, we had been married for a long time, seeing all the workups to go to overseas and knowing the job I did, she's like, how could you do all that? And when it comes to your family, you'll quit. And that question for me just, it was like that time in my life, it just radically impacted me and challenged me. And, you know, she was right. I had quit on the most important things in my life. My role as a husband, my role as a father, that 17-year-old kid that raised his hand and said he wanted to do something important with his life. I quit on all the things that were most important, including my health. And I made a decision that day that I was going to turn around and fight with the same work ethic and tenacity for the most important things in my life.
Because you were not only police officer, special forces, you were MMA fighter. I mean, you have been at the top of the game yeah. on everything you do.
Yeah, I had an 18-2 professional record, so I did really well. And some the whole time, you imagine my wife is and my family is observing me being successful in the professional things, which I think many men are. And when it comes to the most important things, we don't put the same effort.
I've blown it for most of my life until really the last 15 years.
Yeah.
You know, we just don't see it until sometimes it's too late.
So did you save your family? You got it back together?
Yes. I didn't know how to do it. I just knew that it was going to. And so I was able to, I had a lot of people following me because I was in MMA at the time. So I had like 1,000 students, but I didn't have people that were holding me accountable to the things. I had a lot of people enabling me. So I was able to align with this guy named Steve Toth, who became a mentor to me. And he really mentored me in a biblical model of living, manhood. And at the end of that, I felt like I found, like I was dying of stage 4 terminal cancer and found the cure. Like I had to share it. And that's why I do what I do today. I mean, I had went from having panic attacks still at night, anger, anxiety, things that I felt were uncontrollable, to becoming back in control of my life by the choices I made every day. It was really a realization of that regardless of what happened to me, as whether it was heroic or destructive or a sad story, those things didn't put me in the situation I was in, the choices I was making was. Mm-hmm. And so when I realized that and realized I had control of my life still, I was able to make different choices moving forward.
Quickly, tell me about Mighty Oaks, because Mercury One just gave a $25,000 donation yesterday to Mighty Oaks Foundation. I want you to be involved. If you care about our servicemen and this issue, this is a great way to get involved.
Yeah, Mighty Oaks wasn't an idea to start a better nonprofit. Yeah. It was me wanting to pay forward what the challenge my wife gave me, the second chance God gave me, and the mentorship Steve gave me. Like, I felt like I found the solution and I had an obligation to share it. And so today it's grown into this very large organization that we're running 30 programs a year. And those programs is a week long intensive to take guys through the same transitional process that I went through and then equip them to pass it on to someone else. So it's taking a leader who's fell in his face and raising them back up to be a leader again and be a warrior again.
How much of the 12-step program do you use, or have you looked at any of the 12-step program?
Yeah, we have. I would say some components of it put into our methodology. But our methodology is simply contrasting your life to the life we believe you were created to live, coming to the point to where you accept responsibility that regardless of what happened to you, you're responsible for moving forward, the choices you make. And then coming alongside guys that could hold you accountable to that. All of our instructors are combat vets, so it's non-clinical. So they're able to share their story of what worked for them. And whether a psychologist is more qualified than one of our instructors is irrelevant, because the combat veteran typically only listen to someone that's been there before them. So the power of testimony.
What is the, what's the website?
Website's mightyoaksprograms.org. Okay.
Mightyoaksprograms.org. Can't recommend it highly enough. If you care about making a difference and helping these guys who so desperately need our help, this is the way for you to get involved.
And the U.S. military sends guys to us on active duty orders, which we fund. So no veteran, no active duty military pays to come. So
and it's what is it, like $2,500 a person?
So it's underwritten because we have so much great support. So $1,000 a scholarship.
That's
one guy
amazing.
To a program.
So you want to change one guy's life, it's $1,000.
Yes.
And it really does change lives.
That's right.
Thank you, Chad.
Thanks so much, Glenn.
God bless you guys.
God bless you guys.
Thank you.
Glenn Beck.
The Blaze Radio Network.
Hey, I want to talk to you a little bit about the trouble that I have sometimes with my son and my daughter. They love the internet, as I do. The internet is an incredible resource, educational, social, recreational. It's all good, except it's not all good. Some of it is real bad, and it can show up on your kid's screen when you least expect it. So how do you as a parent handle it? I want to tell you about Hero Parental Control. It's the most comprehensive family internet solution available, and the activity from all of your family's devices can be filtered, can be monitored, and even tracked via GPS from a dashboard on your phone or your iPad. Material that may be healthy for a teen can be harmful to a young child, and so you need to have the perfect protection level from toddler to teen to mom and dad. One of the most important steps to a safer internet in your home is recognizing this is a really big issue. Hero gives you the power to create a protected and nurturing online environment. There's nothing like it. Try Hero. Block the bad. Choose what's good for your family. Visit blazehero.com. That's blazehero.com.